Welcome to episode 358 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm your host and producer, Josh Pollard.
And I'm your host, Richard Gunther. And this is the show where we talk about Microsoft entertainment technology, including audio, video, gaming, and more across all Windows platforms.
You know, I just noticed that in that list of things that we talk about, we have video and gaming right next to each other. So it sounds like audio and video gaming. And there's, you know, video is our first segment, really. Maybe we should change the order of that.
Because it doesn't flow well. It doesn't set video, audio, gaming. It doesn't work that way. Audio, video, mobile, gaming. We'll work on that.
Because it's called AV, not VA.
Yeah. Video and audio.
Yeah, that would be kind of weird.
That doesn't work.
We'll figure that out. Instead, why don't we just jump into some feedback from our great listeners. And this week, we've got a voicemail. How was that sent in, our listeners might be asking, since there's no phone number to call and leave a voicemail to. You can do this with email. Here's what you do. You record an MP3 of yourself, and then you attach it to an email. It's really that easy. That's what Mike Fauché did, and here is what Mike had to say.
Hey, Josh, Richard, how you guys doing? This is Mike Fauché. I just wanted to comment on the Wi-Fi question that was from one of your listeners. I share Dave's input on the problems I've had with Ubiquities. They've not been a great experience for me. Add to the equation the computer that has to run and the software that has to run. Add to that the power or the proprietary power over Ethernet as opposed to the standard PoE to the equation. And to me, for the home, it just makes it impractical. It's a very convoluted thing to set up, you know, a SSD or wireless extension and to really kind of expand your network very easily. What I would suggest and the listener take a look at is the OpenMesh MR1750 AC router. It's similar to the Ubiquity in the way it mounts and stuff. It is a standard PoE device. It's cloud-based, so you can set the entire thing up through the cloud. It is super, super easy to expand, to add access points, and to configure up to one guest and three additional SSIDs all within one access point. I have 20 wireless devices, including about six or seven cameras. Wireless cameras that are running through it all the time, and I've had zero problems with it. The performance is outstanding, and they're just great units. So, as an alternate suggestion to the Ubiquities, would recommend you take a look at that. All right, hope you guys are doing well. Talk to you soon.
So it's interesting. I know that there have been some reported problems using Ubiquity. I know Dave's talked about it on the home server show. I have not experienced problems. I've been really happy with the product and the service it provides. I'm not bothered by the fact that I have to run something on a server, and I wasn't bothered by the fact that I had to buy a special PoE switch because I didn't just happen to have one around. Now,
right. Which a lot of people won't.
Right, exactly. Now, that said, this is a system that isn't necessarily designed for residential systems. It is really intended for hotels, offices, other hospitality, and commercial properties. But if you have a large home, it may work well for you. It may not. I don't know anything about the system that he talked about. That may be something else you might want to look into.
Yeah, I can't remember if I mentioned OpenMesh last week. But right as these emails were coming in, I was also looking at solutions like this, not for my house, instead for my church, because their network sucks. And I had seen a tweet like the day that I was looking at this stuff about OpenMesh, and it looked like a cheaper competitor to Ubiquity, but a lot of times cheaper competitors mean not as good. So I'm very curious. I was very curious to hear if that was going to be what Mike was going to recommend when he said that he didn't like Ubiquity. So a very interesting take on that. you know, like you point out, this stuff is, none of this stuff is really geared towards residential because most people just don't have these kinds of problems in their house. But if you have a long one story house like you do, or maybe you just have a big property where you want to, you know, maybe the pool is really far away from the house or something like that, then these systems start to make a lot more sense. So,
oh, I want that.
Don't you have like a river or something like that nearby?
Yeah, like we do, boats? But can't actually get down to the river from the property. I mean, you could, but then you're in a marsh. So it's not like we could launch anything down there.
Not exactly ideal. Yeah.
No. All right. Well, thanks, Mike. It's good information for anybody looking into Wi-Fi systems themselves. Now, we have a bunch of feedback here, and I have to just thank our listeners because most of this is information to help you and I with challenges we've been facing. So this is awesome. I love you guys. All right. First message is from Anthony, and he says, "Hi, Josh and Richard. Regarding your article on Microsoft starts pushing Windows 10 as a recommended update," and we talked about this recently, where you're getting more and more aggressive interest from Microsoft in pushing Windows 10 out to you. He says, "I read the article and called Microsoft technical support about this issue since I was concerned about an unwanted Windows 10, and he puts this in quotes, upgrade. I just got off the phone with Microsoft support, and the Windows 10 upgrade can be disabled by taking the following steps on Windows 7 SP1 Home Premium. I've also confirmed that this works on Ultimate and Pro and other versions. So this is a really good solution, assuming it sticks. Step one, go into the Task Manager in the Processes tab and select the GWX executable and end it. Step two, go to the Windows System 32 GWX directory and either delete or rename it. Reboot, your Windows 10 prompt, gone. It's not in the tray anymore. Stops annoying you. Now, remember that this is ultimately going to get pushed out through Windows Update. So, optionally, you may also want to look for that Windows 10 recommended update and hide it when it comes in. But Microsoft advised Anthony that he may see it as many as 3 times, and you might have to hide it 3 times, meaning they are going to repeatedly send this update, even to people who have decided that they don't want it.
You know, we've talked in the past about the ability to hide recommended updates by selecting them in Windows Update and doing this. I didn't know that they could come back, though.
Is that crazy?
That's super crazy. And I wonder if this is the first time they've made them come back, which wouldn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, I don't know.
So that is some great information from Anthony. Thank you for taking the initiative, calling Microsoft technical support and getting that straight from the horse's mouth. It's not, you know, this isn't just helpful info for you and I, Richard. This is helpful for all of our listeners. So thank you to Anthony for sharing this with everybody who listens to Entertainment 2.0.
Yep, and I've already done it on 2 machines.
Awesome. All right, our next message is from John. He said, "I heard you mention that you can't watch your protected content anywhere else but the media center it was recorded on. Does the media center happen to be plugged into your Xbox One? Because you can actually stream live TV being passed through your Xbox One. Just use the Xbox app for Windows 10. I've used my Surface Pro to watch TV from my Dish Network box. It's plugged into the HDMI on my Xbox One, and it works great." He has more to say, but a quick response to this: it doesn't work. I tried this as soon as the TV streaming or Xbox streaming in general was made available. You can stream whatever is coming through your Xbox One HDMI input port as long as it's not protected. And just to verify that this hasn't changed, I tried again over the weekend. Fired up the race. Did the streaming, went to Media Center. Media Center streams fine. Picked the race. And as soon as I started it, it went black and gave a message about not being able to watch it. I don't remember the exact message, but it's basically, you can't watch this because it's protected. So thank you, John, for that suggestion on trying that. But nope, you just can't get around Windows Media Center's copy protection.
I wonder if that happens to be because the satellite content protection mechanism and the cable content protection mechanism is different.
Well, I don't know if that's the case. I would bet that it's not. My bet is that the things that he's watching via Dish Network aren't copy protected. You know, if he was watching an ABC recording, that wouldn't be an issue at all. I've been able to do that in the past, but not if it's protected. All right, the rest of his email says, and just a random comment because you mentioned it in your CES coverage, but I just got the Dish Network Hopper 3 installed and I'm floored at how great this thing is. I never knew how much I hated dealing with tuner conflicts until I didn't have any to worry about anymore. Having 16 tuners rocks. If Plex or Media Browser could ever get an app on this thing, it truly would be the ultimate media center. It already has Vivo, Pandora, and Netflix built in, as well as DLNA support. It's supposed to be getting a YouTube app in a couple of months, and an upgrade will allow you to watch 4 HD channels at once for when football season rolls around. Yeah, Richard, this new Hopper does really sound fantastic. And we talked about that during our CES coverage about how great this thing really does look.
Yeah. I'm drooling. I'm a little bit jealous, but the problem is I just don't want Dish.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Well, one more message, and this one is from Richard, and he says, "Hi guys, love the show. Total Media Theater 6 can play HD DVDs, even though they're not officially listed. I have it on my desktop in the bedroom and on the home theater PC in the living room. Both are running Windows 7 with Service Pack 1. I also have Total Media Theater 5 on the desktop. Never got around to installing any updates before ArcSoft canceled 6 because it was working fine for me. I would never have purchased it if it didn't play both formats. It also plays files from the hard drive without any issues. I think you need to do a complete rebuild and reinstall of your box if you have the time. I would also limit my Windows updates." So a couple things here. Great to know that this is supposed to still work. So I will see if I can experiment a little bit and find out what's going on there. It would be great if it will play these. I think you're right that I probably should rebuild my media center. I just don't want to.
Right. That's a big hassle.
It is. It really is. That said, it's been at least 3 or 4 years.
No.
I think it has.
No.
It was before I moved.
Really?
Really.
Huh. Then I guess you're about due. Good luck with all those copy protected recordings.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of a crapshoot as to whether that's going to work or not.
It's almost definitely not going to work, right? I mean, we've been through this before.
Yeah, I don't remember. I always forget. Do they play again or don't they? I don't remember.
I'm almost positive they don't, but it's been a long time for me too. Otherwise, I wouldn't have had to re-record all those Disney shows for my kids.
Well, but I thought you had some other stuff that they didn't play. Thought you were using a completely different computer.
No. The last time I did it was when I got a new hard drive, like a new operating system drive. But that was the only thing that changed at the time.
Huh. Well, I don't know.
I think you're going to lose them. You got to bank on the fact that they're not going to work. And if they do work, be pleasantly surprised.
Okay, I'll do that.
All right, so let's move into this week's topics. On the video front, we've got a pretty big Windows 10 app announcement, and that is Hulu has released a new universal Windows 10 app. Universal, that means it's on Windows 10 desktop PCs, laptops, tablets, and on Windows Phone. Or sorry, I keep calling it that. Windows 10 mobile. Sorry, still can't get used to this Windows mobile thing again. It's been too long. It's Hulu, and it's an app, though. So despite the fact that Hulu doesn't have convenient ways of naming things to differentiate what requires a subscription and what doesn't anymore, this app, like the apps on most other things, will require a paid subscription to use. So that kind of stinks, I guess, unless you're a Hulu subscriber. If you're not a Hulu subscriber, then I guess you just keep using the browser. But this app looks pretty cool. It's got at least one interesting feature for you Windows 10 users, and that's Cortana support. So you can say, their example is, hey Cortana, Hulu, play Family Guy. And it's going to do one of a couple of things. If you've never watched Family Guy, it's just going to fire up the app and automatically start playing the first episode of Family Guy. If you are chugging your way through Family Guy and say you're on season 3, episode 6, assuming there are 3 seasons of Family Guy, I don't know, I don't watch it. Then if you were to say the same thing, it would launch Hulu and start playing the next episode that you haven't watched, which is pretty cool. I'm sure Richard's going to hate the language, you know, the very specific language that you have to use.
I was just thinking about that.
Yep. I mean, I understand your beef. You were very adamant that none of these voice control things do natural language very well.
Yep.
So one other thing to point out with Hulu, for any of you that are Hulu subscribers and want to check this out, well, there's a new Hulu original that just started this week. It's called 11/22/63, which I believe is a Stephen King book that they've turned into a show that is about the Kennedy assassination. That's the date there for you. In case you're in high school and have a history quiz tomorrow, there you go. There's your answer. 11/22/63.
Done by J.J. Abrams too.
Yeah. A new show, and you can watch the first episode for free using this app, and well, probably any place on Hulu. But hey, on Windows 10, watch it for free.
Cool. I tried to see what this was like, but you know, since my tablet can't seem to retain any battery when it's not in use for more than a day or two, I went to a dead tablet and wasn't able to try it.
Boo.
Yeah. Hey, what's going on in this week in closed out services that once or do belong to Microsoft?
Oh man. So this week we're talking about Mix Radio. You remember that? Maybe not. It was probably one of the lesser used music streaming services that came from Nokia originally. This came along with Nokia when Microsoft purchased them. And then shortly after Microsoft purchased them, they said, yeah, we don't really need this. We've already got
one of these.
Yeah. Let's see here. What did they call? They probably called it Xbox Music at the time. So we don't really need this. And they put it on the auction block and sold it off to a company called Line, which I think does instant messaging apps, which I think astounded us when this news first came out in 2014.
Right, exactly. We were all wondering, what are they going to do with this?
Yeah. So, but Line was really excited about it. They said that they were going to continue to support the Windows Phone app. In addition to releasing iOS and Android apps, they did that. They planned to release a universal Windows app. They didn't do that. And well, now they're definitely not going to, because this service is going away. Apparently, Line couldn't make this music streaming service profitable, so they're ditching it.
All right. So what have we learned from this?
Well, there's no room for small players in music streaming.
Okay. That's probably a lot nicer than what I was going to say. I think we've learned that you shouldn't be banking on a music service that's offered by your phone's provider. We've seen this happen with Sony. We've seen this happen with now Nokia. We've seen this happen with even Samsung when they closed the Milk music service.
Maybe the best named music streaming service ever.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure of that. Anyway, who has succeeded at this? Apple. So far,
have they?
What, really? You don't think that Apple's iTunes Music is successful?
Well,
they are the number one retailer of music.
Retailer, yes. Is their streaming service doing well, though?
It's hard to tell, right? Do we know actual numbers?
No, of course not. Apple would never tell us their numbers.
Oh, they will when they're a win.
Well, right. And they haven't, so that should tell you enough right there. So, I mean, how many people do you know that when their free trial to Apple Music ran out. How many actually kept it? I don't know anybody who kept it.
I know many people who did, but I didn't do it myself. The reason for that was because I already have Spotify.
And because Spotify's better.
Apple Music, when it came out, was a mess. They're making it better, but it was a mess. And, you know, I'm sure it will continue to get better. And I'm sure it will continue to get additional users and grow. But yeah, not for me. That said, as far as a music ecosystem is concerned, I think iTunes wins overall.
Sure. In terms of a place selling music, they probably are first. I have to imagine that Amazon is close there, but I don't really know for sure. I don't have numbers for either. But in terms of streaming services, I'm not ready to say that Apple has been successful with that just yet.
All right. So bottom line, get Spotify.
Yep. You and I can definitely agree on that point. Well, another thing we agree on is that podcasts are awesome. And if you're going to be a big time podcast listener, you need a good app for it. You've heard me complaining of late that the Pocket Cast app on Windows Phone has not been the greatest for me of late. And I've been looking for replacements. I had also, a couple months ago, and I can't even remember if we talked about it initially back then, had discovered an app on Windows 10 on the desktop side called, at the time it was called Groove Podcast. And we were confused when we first found it and thought, really? Microsoft made a new podcast app with the Groove branding? Nope, they didn't. And I think you were the one that pointed out to me when they changed the name of this app to Grover instead of Groove and basically kind of kept the same branding and stuff. But so they've released a new app called Grover Pro. It's basically an enhanced version of what Grover Podcast offers, but it's universal, which is what I was really waiting for because I don't listen to a lot of podcasts on PCs. I listen to them all the time on my phone. So Grover Pro, truly universal, works on Windows 10 and Windows 10 mobile, syncs the data in between, kind of, although that's something I'm still playing with to see how well that works. I just got this app today, so I haven't really been able to put it through its paces entirely. But on the PC, this app works really well. It's got, frankly, it's got all of the features that I primarily look for. I am kind of struggling to think of any major feature that it doesn't have. If you are looking to add subscriptions to your library, it searches iTunes, which is crucial for being able to find what you want. It supports audio and video podcast. You can set it up to automatically download shows, to have it automatically delete them when you finish downloading. You have control of playback speed, and the price isn't bad either. It's not a free app, this version. The one that's just Grover is free, but if you want the universal app, it's going to cost you $2.99, but that's still cheaper than some of the competition. I believe Pocket Cast is either $3.99 or $4.99. And so far, really liking Grover Pro. I'll give a full, I'm not sure that review is the right word, but I'll give more feedback on this next week. I'm going to try making this my main app, see how it goes. I've tried all of them on Windows Phone, and this looks to be, it looks like it has the potential to be the best of them available. And the fact that it's universal could make, a big difference to people who want to listen on multiple devices.
When you've been really looking for something to kind of jump from Pocket Casts to support your daily podcast needs.
Exactly. Yeah. So the timing on this is perfect.
How about playlists? Does it allow you to create playlists so you can decide what order you might want to listen to things in?
I believe it only has a now playing list right now, like basically a current playlist. You can't, I don't think there's a way to set up like automated playlist where it comes in and says, these five podcasts, whenever there's a new episode, put this in a playlist and I'm going to go and listen to that playlist, if that's what you're talking about. I don't think it has any of that yet.
Okay. But it does have the ability to at least autoplay multiple shows, like if you're driving, so you don't have to force it to play the next show?
Right. Theoretically, it does, but I've only started listening to one show through it so far. So that's definitely one of the things that I'll be looking for. And I'll know as soon as tomorrow if that works.
Cool. Report back.
Yep, definitely will. Sorry to interrupt the show, but this next segment, we're going to talk a little bit about some issues with the Windows Store in relation to AAA games. And there were some assumptions that I made while we had this conversation that I later found out after the show weren't correct. Since then, I've written up a blog post on the Digital Media Zone, and it's linked in the show notes here, but it corrects all of the information about the save location of Windows Store apps and even the ability to move apps. So you'll definitely want to check out that blog post after listening to this segment. Sorry for the interruption. Now back to the show. All right, so on to our gaming news for the week. You know, we don't frequently talk about game releases and game release dates and things like that, but one game that we've been talking about, both of us, Richard, since the original Xbox One announcement is a game called Quantum Break. This game looks amazing. It looks very different than most games I've ever played. And well, that's pretty easy for you to say since you don't really play games. But third-person action game with lots of time travel-ish mechanics built into it. This is also the one where they recorded a bunch of, basically a live-action TV show to go along with this, where you play as the hero in the game, and you'll essentially play through a level, and then they'll show you kind of like a mini episode of a TV show of the story from the bad guy's perspective. And that's kind of cool. So this game is coming out April 5th. You know, it's one of the biggest games that Microsoft has launching in the second quarter of the year. And it's an Xbox One console exclusive, but it's also now officially coming to Windows 10 PCs, specifically Windows 10 PCs, because it's only going to be available on PC through the Windows Store. Now, the other cool thing about this, if you're super hyped about this game, pre-order it, because if you pre-order it on Xbox One, you will also get a copy of it for PC for free, which is, it's never been done by Microsoft. And frankly, I can't think of any other game that costs money where this has been done before. So that's really, really cool. Here's my big problem with this, though. Well, there's really multiple problems. We don't really know a lot about how game updates are going to work when it comes to the Windows 10 store. Most apps, when you have updates for them in the Windows Store, I was going to say most other app stores, but I guess I don't actually know about Android and iOS. If there's an update for an app in Windows, it downloads the whole app. Is that going to be the case with a 30 gigabyte game? Because these games get patched all the time.
Yeah.
But they're usually, you know, a few hundred megs, maybe a couple of gigs on the bigger side. I mean, there's some that are even bigger than that. But like on my Xbox One, if I have Call of Duty and it's 40 gigs and there's a patch, that patch is a few hundred megs and that's all it downloads. If it has to download the whole game over again, that's kind of a problem. Because A, it's going to take forever. And B, if people have bandwidth caps, that's a huge problem. The other problem that I have is, you don't actually really get to control where apps and games that come from the Windows Store are installed on your machine. My main computer, I've got 128 gig SSD as the C drive, and then a couple of other big hard drives. The hard drives are where I install most of my games because my SSD right now has less than 3 gigs of free space. If I wanted to get Quantum Break, there's no way I could because it won't fit on my C drive.
Well, but wait. Do you know that it's going to default to your C drive? Because if you have an external drive attached to your Xbox and you're downloading stuff, it, at some point, it just kind of assumes you're going to download them to your
Your external
to
drive.
To your external drive.
Well, I'm not talking about this problem on the Xbox. I'm talking about this problem on my PC. When you're installing stuff from
the Windows Store. Why can't it be that smart?
I don't know, but I don't think it's going to be.
Hmm.
So I briefly did a search to see, like, is there some way to change this? And there is a way to, you know, you can edit the registry to change the default location of where to store apps. I don't know what that does once you've installed a bunch of apps. I don't know if that's going to go through and move things. I don't know if that only changes things for when a new app gets installed. I don't know what that means when an update to an app comes in. You know, I haven't spent a huge amount of time looking into this, but this is kind of a problem that I think, you know, those two issues, the am I going to have to download this whole game again for an update, and why can't I control where this thing is going to get installed? Those are two big issues with the Windows Store if they're going to use them for games that I think they're going to need to fix in a hurry, because clearly Microsoft wasn't joking around all the times last year when they said they're bringing a much renewed focus on gaming with Windows 10 on the PC.
Right.
This continues to come, and they're going to have to solve these problems in a hurry if they're going to keep releasing these games in the store. Because they did that with Rise of the Tomb Raider last month too. And I'm not sure. I don't want to install these games on my C drive. Some people do. I don't, but we got to figure these problems out.
Yeah.
All right. So it's also a new week, which means a new week of deals with gold and the spotlight sale. In terms of good and good values here, I would say the two standouts in the sale this week would be Madden 16 for $30. Although at this point, if you really want to play Madden, pay for EA Access. You can get EA Access for $30 for a year, and Madden 16 is already in the EA Access vault along with lots of other games. So I would do that instead. That seems like a better buy. And then another game, Oddworld New and Tasty. It's only $8. These Oddworld games, I've never actually played one, but they've always looked really fun, and I might pick this one up because it does look really, really fun. You know, it's a side scroller platformer game, always kind of neat style and story and stuff that goes along with these Oddworld games. And for $8, it's hard to beat. But if even $8 is too much, well, it's the second half of February, which means new games with gold. On the Xbox One side, you can grab Styx. This is that 3D stealth RPG game. I'm actually really excited about this one. I'm going to be checking this out for sure. And then on the Xbox 360 side, little game that maybe you've heard of called Gears of War 2. And oh yeah, it's backwards compatible. So all of these available for free on your Xbox One or Xbox 360. But Gears of War backwards compatible on your Xbox One, and they're free as long as you have Xbox Live Gold. So go and check them out. There's no reason not to.
And I downloaded them at lunch. I don't know if I'll ever play them. Right. All right. Well, our first mobile story this week is about the Lumia that we knew was coming. We knew that there was a mid-level Lumia phone coming, and it is the Lumia 650. Nothing really exciting here. We've heard this story before. It's a 5-inch phone, 720p, OLED display, quad-core, 1.3 gigahertz Snapdragon 212, which means it's not quite powerful enough to be able to support continuity.
Continuum.
So this is a phone only. Continuum. Sorry, continuity is the Mac thing. So this is just a phone, and it has a gig of RAM, 16 gig expandable memory up to 200. And I love the way that Engadget put this. If you have the right micro SD card, because actually, how do you get 200 gigabytes? That's a weird number.
I actually just saw a story for a 200 gigabyte micro SD card like over the weekend.
Weird. I wonder if that's like a limit or something.
Yeah, it's weird for sure.
Of course, it has NFC support. It has a 2000 milliamp battery. 8 megapixel in the back, 5 megapixel in the front, and it's expected to be available February 18th, which is probably roughly when you're hearing this, but in Europe only, for about 150 euros or roughly $200 US, but not available in the US. And there's no information as to when or if it might be available in the US.
See what people are always saying. Microsoft never cares about US customers. They never give us any. Nope, that's actually not at all what they say. So this is a mid-range phone, you know, because it's higher end than the 550, but lower than the 950. And Microsoft has said they were going to focus on three areas: low-end, enthusiast, and business users. So this kind of slots in as that business user phone. But I can't think of a better feature in Windows 10 Mobile for business users than Continuum.
Right.
And this phone doesn't support Continuum.
Right.
Come on, Microsoft.
Yeah, that's a little frustrating here. And, you know, I joked with you before the show that Engadget had an appropriately sensationalist headline for this story. The headline is, Microsoft retreats back to the low end with the Lumia 650. And we'll link to the story because Engadget doesn't have obnoxious click-through ads when you link to their story. But their subhead, I think, is what caught my attention. And their subhead is, because another mediocre Lumia is exactly what the company needs. And I totally appreciate that sarcasm because it seems like this is, again, nothing special. Again, even if you call, and it is a stretch, the 950 a flagship, there's just nothing special going on.
So there's nothing special with the 950 or with the 650?
Yes.
Well, I disagree with you on the 950 front with Continuum support and things like that. But that's not the focus here. The focus here is the 650. And I understand that in the past we've had a huge number of mid and low range phones from Microsoft with the Lumia name on them. Way more than I can count, for sure. But the difference here is this is the new generation. This isn't a 642 or something like that. This is a 650. This is a phone made for Windows 10 Mobile. Comes with Windows 10 Mobile. You're not going to have to worry about whether or not you're going to get a Windows 10 Mobile upgrade with this thing. You know, it's got the, you know, no actual buttons on the front, you know, because it's designed to work with that way of dealing with the UI in Windows 10 Mobile. Like, I get it that they've released a ton in the past, but this is the one mid-range Lumia for the Windows 10 era that they've released. And they say they're not going to release a bazillion phones anymore. They're going to be a lot more focused. And so far, they have been. They've got the 950 and 950 XL for the enthusiast, the 550 for the low end, and, well, this is theoretically more the business phone, but I don't completely agree because of the lack of Continuum. But that seems like the focus. And if they're doing what they said they were going to do, I have a hard time blaming them for that.
Yeah, that's fair. I think I'm tainted by the fact that Continuum is great, but if the 950 is the best that they have to offer, then this looks even worse.
Why do you think the 950 is so terrible?
Well, there are plenty of reports that it's problematic. And in fact, we know Phil Lozen, who I believe has one, talks about it being problematic all the time on Twitter. And I just feel as if I just feel like if they're really going to come out with something that is a flagship, it needs to be differentiated.
But aren't most of the people who are complaining about the 950 complaining about the software, not the hardware? I mean, they're complaining about Windows 10 Mobile and the fact that it's a friggin' beta, but being released on brand new production ready phones.
Okay, that's fine. But that's like trying to separate iOS and the iPhone. Together, they make a product.
I agree. But if Windows 10 Mobile wasn't a mess right now, if it was stable, like let's just say it was stable, not that it had more features and stuff, but if it was stable, wouldn't the 950 be a pretty stinking great phone?
I just think it's more of the same with a faster processor and new OS features.
That sounds like every phone released in the last 2 years. Every phone. Every iPhone, every Windows phone, every Android phone.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to give you that. Because both Android and iOS have made significant inroads in NFC payment and in fingerprint identity. And Microsoft's done nothing in any of those spaces.
Well, they've done identity, just not Microsoft, just not mobile payments. They've done identity in maybe a weird way. not an optimal way, in my opinion, either. But they have done identity. And in a unique way that the other people aren't doing.
Yeah.
I just think that maybe they shouldn't have gone that unique route.
I desperately want to see some awesome hardware. And there's nothing that I can point to that I'm willing to call awesome. And when I find something that is, I'll call it that. Like when HTC came out with a new version of their hardware that was typically Android focused for Windows right. Phone, I loved it. It was awesome.
Yep.
No one bought it.
Yeah, you loved the 8X, maybe more than any non-Windows Phone user. and just to be clear, I'm mostly arguing here the devil's advocate sort of role. Obviously, I don't think the 950 is the greatest phone ever. I'm not buying one. I don't think it's a big enough upgrade from the 1520 for me to go out and spend $600 on one. I kind of look at the jump from the 1520 to the 950 as like the every year jump that the iPhone makes. Like it's the jump from the 6 to the 6S.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that dramatic of a difference, with the exception of Continuum, because I do think Continuum is a big deal, but it's not a feature I would use, and so certainly doesn't justify the money. But I do think it's a good phone, if you can get past the problems with Windows 10. And I understand that you can't really unlink those two, but it's still, in terms of hardware and specs and all that stuff, it's got what it needs to be considered a flagship phone.
Yeah. Yeah, you can call it that. I won't.
So if you have one of those flagship Lumia 950s and really do like the idea of Continuum, there's a new Indiegogo campaign, and I'm sure you're upset that I'm even putting an Indiegogo campaign.
No, I'm just ignoring the next 5 minutes.
But this is really interesting. I think it's really exciting because this is something that I've actually really wanted for Jen for a while. So the idea here is you take your Windows phone that supports Continuum and you buy what's basically a laptop shell. It has a display, it's got a keyboard and a trackpad in it, but it doesn't really have any other guts because you plug your phone into it and use it as a laptop Continuum dock. And I think this sounds awesome.
Wait. So you actually tether your phone to this laptop shell thing?
Yes.
And it has a keyboard and a screen and nothing else.
It's got a big battery in it, so it'll recharge your phone, plus of course provide power to that display and stuff on it. But yeah,
does it have some way of like cradling or holding your phone? Because one of the great things about a laptop is its mobility.
Yeah, but what I mean, lots of people charge their phone off of their laptop all the time. This isn't really any different than that. It's one cable to your phone from your laptop.
Yeah, okay.
I don't think that's that big of a deal. Is it ideal? No, but I'm not really sure. They probably couldn't think of a good way to do a phone dock off of a laptop, because I mean, we've never really seen that done well.
It's hard enough to do it with a tablet.
Especially considering that with Continuum specifically, it treats what you have the phone docked to as a separate device, like as a separate screen. So you can still be doing things on your phone separate from what you're doing on the continuum doc, and I'm kind of putting that in quotes. So it kind of makes sense for it to be just have a cable instead of some weird docking mechanism. And plus, by just making it a cable, it means it'll support more things. In fact, you don't have to use this with continuum. It's also got just mini HDMI input in addition to USB. So, and the keyboard and trackpad are Bluetooth. So this could work with pretty much anything. It'll work with your Android tablets and all that stuff. I don't know about iPads. I would imagine iPads have adapters that switch to mini HDMI so that you could even use this with your Apple devices. Now, an important thing with this, though, is the price has got to be right. Now, you know, if this thing is $300, then I'm just going to buy a laptop. But instead, it's not. So if you were to get in on this right this second, like one of my coworkers did today, $79. Because that's the way
already sold out.
Is it really? I'm not surprised.
Yep.
So the next level is $99. The level after that is $119. And the retail price when this thing launches is $149, which is probably at the top of the range that I think I'd want to pay, but I don't think it's unreasonable because it offers, I think, some pretty useful functionality here. And it's supposed to be coming in June, which is not that far away. Now it's Indiegogo, so I tend to double estimates when I see these crowdfunding things. So
next year.
Yeah. Well, I would say end of the year. But, you know, maybe they are fairly close. I mean, they've already got a Chinese ODM lined up to be working on this and stuff and making prototypes for them. So maybe it's not really that far away. But, you know, maybe this is just a crazy Pollard thing, but I told Jen about this and she was really excited about the idea. So it's not just me who thinks this is a cool thing.
I think it's a very cool concept. I hope they don't get sued out of existence by Apple because their industrial design is very familiar if you know what a MacBook looks like.
Yeah, I mean, this clamshell thing does look a lot like the MacBook Air. It's bigger because it's a 14-inch display on this thing. But yeah, it's pretty similar to a MacBook Air for sure.
Yep. So yeah, it's a cool concept. I'll give you that.
You know, I didn't say the name of it. It's called the NexDock, NexDock, no space. But of course, we'll have a link to this in the show notes for all of you.
Cool. All right, well, that's it for Microsoft news. So with one industry story today, we're revisiting something that, well, caused me to rant, caused me to write, caused me to get into a little bit of a spat with a friend of mine, and that is the lawsuit against Dish. We talked about Dish earlier when we were talking about the Hopper, by Fox and pretty much every other network too. But specifically, we learned today that Fox has essentially, you know, for all intents and purposes, won because Dish has agreed to settle with Fox to put their lawsuit down. Now, they've already settled with CBS and ABC. And now they're settling with Fox. Now, let me remind you about what this was all about. All the networks got themselves all worked up about the fact that Dish Network introduced a feature called AutoHop, which would allow you to automatically skip commercials on the primetime recordings that would automatically get recorded from the four networks through their service called Primetime Anytime. And their service gives you the ability to just, when you play back, say, yeah, I don't want to watch the commercials. And everybody claimed copyright. I still, to this day, because I'm not a copyright attorney, don't understand how this is a violation of copyright. But they claim it is. And 3 out of 4 lawsuits so far have been settled by Dish. So that suggests that Dish thinks that they probably have a case. NBC is still outstanding. The NBC case is still going through the court system. But here is what Fox got out of Dish. Fox recordings will no longer automatically skip commercials in the primetime anytime feature, unless they are 7 days old or older. You know how many days Primetime Anytime keeps recordings around?
It's got to be a while, right?
8 days. 8 days.
Yeah.
So for 2 whole days, you'll be allowed to skip commercials in the Fox recordings.
Well, you'll be able to have them automatically skipped for you.
Well, yeah. I mean, you could always do the skip, skip, skip thing on your remote, but it would automatically skip them now if it's in day 7 or day 8.
Yeah. And it's similar windows for CBS and ABC, right? Like, I don't think it's quite as long, but they have delays also.
Yeah, I forget what the terms of their concessions were, but basically what Dish has had to do is squelch this otherwise consumer satisfying, innovative technology feature in the name of licensing and big media profit.
Yeah, you know, if this is a story that's really interesting to you, I really liked the take that the guys from Cord Killers had on this. And what they basically said was, this really isn't all that bad at all for Dish Network, because Dish Network got to have all of these months of saying, we've got this awesome auto hop feature, and they can basically still say, hey, we've still got auto hop. Come and get our DVR. It's got auto hop. It still does.
Yeah, it does. But once again, the content providers, in this case, not even the content creators, but the content conduits, have managed to confuse consumers with all these different convoluted ways of managing your content. If it's this, well, then you have to wait so many days. If it's this other content, you have to wait so many other days. This is exactly like the problems that we have with Sling TV, where Sling TV, also owned by Dish, is kind of crippled. That's a bad word. It's not necessarily crippled. It is inhibited from achieving its full usefulness and capability because some programs you can skip ahead, some you can't. Some programs you can record, some you can't. And it's all entirely arbitrary because everybody wants to have their hold over the pipe.
Yeah, that is the exact example that I was going to go to. You know, Sling TV, owned by Dish, has so many problems of, you know, it's more than a year out at this point, and I still couldn't explain to anyone all of those different limitations. You know, it's also got video on demand, but only some channels, and who knows for how long. And yeah, it would be a hard search. Like, there's so many cool things about Sling TV, but you know, if you just get a DVR, you can record it whenever you want. You can watch it whenever you want.
Yep.
And it just works. And with Sling TV, it's like, well, you can always watch it live, assuming that nothing goes down with the service. And, well, maybe it can record it or not. And yeah, it's really, really frustrating.
Yep.
But it's also only $20.
True. True. Anyway, I'm frustrated by this, as I'm sure you can tell, but you know, once again, the big media companies win. Yay. Hey, you know what we usually talk about right now?
What's going on in our entertainment settings?
Yeah, and I kind of have a lot to talk about. So why don't you go first?
Oh, because you're just assuming that I don't?
Yeah.
Well, that's a pretty safe assumption, actually.
All right, well, let's ask. Did you watch The Walking Dead?
No, I didn't. I very actively chose not to watch The Walking Dead. Because of how frustrated I am with how this season has gone. Now, I have not canceled the series. I am recording it still. I'm not completely giving up on the show. But here's what I'm doing, essentially, is I'm going to wait a few episodes and see what other people say. Is this show worth coming back to? Because the first half of the season was boring. They pulled out, mechanics that they've used to get out of situations in previous seasons, to get out of situations here. Like, it's just not what the show used to be. And if it's a show that requires me to sit on my couch to watch because of copy protection, it better be a show that's going to hold my interest all the way through the show. And The Walking Dead was unable to do that this season. When I find myself pulling out my phone and checking Twitter and Flipboard and stuff like that while I'm watching the episodes and during more than one episode, that's just not going to work. Like, I'm not going to consume what little time I have for watching TV to watch your show if you can't hold my interest like that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. All right. Well, so how about The Expanse? Have you watched that at all?
No. So, not for the same reasons. I'm interested in watching The Expanse. And so I've got some reasons for all of these shows, but for this week in particular, it was just a bad week. I was gone for most of the weekend, which is when I would watch most of this stuff. So, yeah, that's the main reason why. But there are things holding me back from watching the things that I want to watch. Copy protection is a big one. That's a problem with The Expanse because it's on Sci-Fi, I think. I don't know. It's on some cable channel.
Yep.
Into the Badlands. It's on AMC. I've got all of those recorded. Haven't watched any of them yet because, again, I've got to sit down in front of my TV to watch them, which I know is weird, but I've talked about a lot in the past that a lot of my TV viewing is done on my computer or on my tablet while I'm trying to do other things. So that's the problem there. And that's been difficult too because those other things that I might watch, like, you know, I've still got a couple of seasons of The Wire to watch. I've got Homeland that I could sign up for Showtime and stream those. The problem with all of that is I'm having serious issues with bandwidth caps on my internet provider. I get 350 gigs a month, period. And we've been hitting that or going over that every single month for like the past 5 months. And, you know, I've scaled back the quality settings on Netflix, but you can't do that on Amazon. And so it makes me not want to watch the shows that I want to watch without having to shuck out even more money for what already seems like pricey internet service to me.
Right.
You know, I think it's about $60 a month to get 27 megs down and a 350 gig cap, which I've talked to people from other parts of the country, and that sounds like a lot of money compared to what other people are paying. I don't know about you with your Fios, but it seems like a lot to me. And it's harder for some people to figure that out because of bundling and all that crap. But
yeah, I mean, I'm all bundled, and remember, I have like every premium.
Right. So those are the big problems for me right now. But there are some shows that I could be watching that I wouldn't have any of these problems with. Heroes. I do want to finish Heroes. I'm not entirely sure why, but I do want to finish Heroes. So we'll probably go back and finish that soon-ish. And I've got, you know, a few episodes of The X-Files, which seems like it might be worth watching. Is it worth watching? I mean, I kind of miss The X-Files from way back in the day. Is it worth watching?
If you liked The X-Files, they've given you a couple more episodes of The X-Files, and that's pretty much all they've done.
Okay. I haven't watched The X-Files in like 20 years, though. So maybe I'll watch one or two of these and then give up on that, too. Who knows? And other than that, it's just been gaming for me. And for me, this weekend, again, I was gone most of the weekend, so there wasn't a lot of that, but it was a double XP and double weapon XP weekend in Call of Duty, so that's all that I played in terms of gaming last weekend. And this weekend is the Division beta, so yay. That's what I'll be doing this weekend. And that's it for me.
All right, well, since we're in TV, let me talk about what I've been watching. So I finished season 4 of Boston Legal, sent the disc back, season 5 disc is on its way.
How many seasons of that show?
5.
Oh, good. You're almost done.
And season 5 is actually a short season, so I will need 2 discs, and then I have the rest of it recorded, and I'll be able to watch that. I'm not quite sure why I'm missing a bunch of episodes in the middle. But again, I love this show, and I love that the issues that they're talking about are still issues that we're dealing with now. And so, it's a good show. It's a good show. I've been keeping up with The X-Files. Like I said, I'm not overly excited. The season finale is next week. I hope it's good. because otherwise all they really did was give us a couple more episodes and why bother? Been keeping up with Downton Abbey, been keeping up with Shameless. Oh, Shameless is so good this year and just so wrong in so many ways. I've been trying to catch up on Doctor Who, and I think I've mentioned in the past that we've been kind of disappointed with Doctor Who. I'm not a big fan of the Peter Capaldi Doctor Who character. He's growing on me a little bit, but we just watched the second half of an episode called The Zygon Inversion, and I have to say, there was a standoff scene in that episode that is probably one of the best scenes I've seen in Doctor Who in years. It was fantastic. So a little bit of cred there. I think they're trying. They're really trying. I don't know if I'm going to be able to deal with another whole season of him as the Doctor, though. So we'll see what happens next season. The Amazing Race started. You guys watching that in your house?
I don't know. I don't watch it, but Jen does, and that's one of those shows where they changed the name.
It didn't record. Yeah, no, it absolutely did not record.
Crap. I'm going to have to fix that as soon as we're done recording this.
Yeah, you will. And the existing episode that you missed is available on CBS.com, so it can be streamed there. But yeah, it's their usual thing where they change the metadata every season so that it won't record automatically. Why do they do that? I don't understand.
I don't get it.
And this season, it's all with a whole bunch of famous social media people. I don't know any of them. Not one.
That's hilarious.
And then you mentioned 11/22/65. I really want to watch this show. I just actually recorded it with Play On so that I can watch it while I'm traveling next week. I'm not going to have time this week, but I really want to watch this. I think this has a lot of potential.
Okay, you failed your history quiz. It's 63, not 65.
Oh, I wrote it down wrong. And I suck at history. All right. Now, I have finally made some moves to get my media server together. So I want to talk about that a little bit. I ended up deciding that I'm going to use my old Mac Pro. So this was involved. I have a metal shelving unit in my closet in my office. The shelf that I was going to put it on wasn't quite tall enough to be able to hold the new computer that I was putting in it. So I had to reconstruct the shelves in my office so that I could put this in there. Got it in, booted it up. Remember, it's a Mac, but I have Bootcamp. Switched over to Windows 7, and I have something like 220 some updates waiting for me. Okay, fine. So I let it update overnight and it gets stuck. So I do the thing you're not supposed to do and I have to force turn it off in the middle of an update because it was stuck. It recovered okay. So a couple of reboots later, and I got all the updates in, and I'm running with the latest version of Windows 7. I installed Play On. I'm having some problems recording shows from Netflix and some of the services there, so I'm not quite sure what's going on with it. I have to investigate that a little bit. I installed Plex, and so I started playing around a little bit, seeing what I can do. Now, when I was at CES, I talked to the folks at Plex, and they were kind enough to hook us up with a premium pass upgrade so that when we're talking about this on the show, we can do it with the context of knowing all of the capabilities of the system. So thank you very much to the folks at Plex for doing that. And I expect that I'm probably going to end up talking about this for a while because I have to say, I'm pretty impressed with Plex. It is not the convoluted mess that I remember when I last played with it. So I ended up pointing it to a couple folders where I knew that I had some movie files. I forgot that it didn't play disk files. That frustrated me a little bit, but I understand why. They say because it goes against the spirit of playing movies directly and videos directly, but you know, that's not it. You know, it's copyright issues. but you know, so it can play MP4s and M4Vs and MKVs and stuff like that. It really churns on the MKV transcoding if I'm trying to play those, but does a really good job with the MP4s. And I decided to try a couple of the different apps and see what they're like. So the Apple TV has an app, the Xbox One and Xbox 360 both have an app. They're all pretty good. The Apple TV, I think, is my favorite. But remember, I have a TiVo. And I'm like, well, let me just try it right on the TiVo. Oh my God, is that terrible?
Really?
Yeah. So the first problem is 720p is the best resolution it'll display.
What?
Why? 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 And then it defaults to stereo audio if you have multiple audio formats. It just defaults to the first one. It doesn't try to find the best one. Whereas on the Apple TV, you can just tell it, play the high quality audio as the preferred audio. But that doesn't seem to happen or be an option or work on the version that's on the TiVo. And then add to that I had sync issues when I was playing videos back. And I played the same videos back on other platforms and didn't have sync issues there. So kind of messy. And then one thing that I have to say is that I don't like, and this is the same problem on TiVo with the Amazon app, I don't like that the app on TiVo and even on some other platforms doesn't honor the standard shuttle controls that are built into your remote. So if you have fast forward and skip and rewind and skip back, they may, or more likely, they may not actually do anything when you're playing videos in a Plex app. And in TiVo, they don't do anything. The only thing that works is the play pause and then the select button, which will actually bring up a list of menu items like commands, shuttle buttons that you can then use your cursor to find the right one that you want and select, which is just a pain in the butt. Like, why would you do it that way?
Yeah, that is annoying.
And some of the other apps work that way on the other platforms too. So far, it seems like the Apple TV is really the best. It works the way the Apple TV remote is expected to work. I really hope that the folks at Plex are going to try and take advantage of whatever capability the platforms will offer them in terms of actually using all of the keys available to them in the remote, because this is really kind of frustrating. And while I may be able to deal with it, I don't have patience. I'm not saying I'll have the patience for it. I may be able to deal with it. I don't know that anybody else would be able to. So yeah, that's kind of weird. The other thing that I noticed is that it was automatically including trailers as films in my movie library. And it's supposed to be smart enough to ignore anything that has the word trailer at the beginning or at the end, but it didn't. And so they were getting included in there as movies, and I didn't want that. So I ended up actually having to create a file that is designed to almost like an htaccess file that you might have on a server that tells it ignore certain types of files. And I ignored anything that had the word trailer in it, and that worked, but that seemed kind of kludgy. So according to their documentation, it should automatically ignore things that are trailers if they're named properly, but it's not actually working.
Why do you have trailers stored? You go back and rewatch trailers?
Yes. So when I have a movie, I usually also download the trailer for the movie so that, let's say I have people over and we're trying to decide what movie to watch and it's down to a couple different movies and they don't know which one, we'll watch the trailers.
I think Plex might have a plugin for that.
They do, if the trailer is readily available and you can easily get to it, like through, you know, whatever service. I don't know if it's YouTube or whatever else. But not every movie has a trailer available. One of the movies I have a trailer for is Goonies.
Oh.
Do you want to bet if there's a trailer online on YouTube for the Goonies?
There's got to be. Everything's on YouTube, right?
So anyway, that's why I have them. So hopefully that's just a bug that they'll be trying to figure out. But, you know, overall, so far, I'm pretty happy. I'm pretty excited about it. I think that I might end up, mark this day, liking Plex.
Amazing.
Yeah.
See, all you had to do was actually try it.
Well, after several years of trying it and saying, I can't be bothered with this.
I wouldn't call those real trials.
I would. What are you talking about?
It sounded like you never really did it much.
No, I did. I actually spent, I would say, a good couple of weeks trying to configure it in the past and just ultimately gave up. They're putting out much better interfaces and they're making it a lot easier to maintain. So that's awesome. One final point, and then I'm done. And that's that after I got all this set up and I have it all running on my Mac, I realized that my Mac can only run Windows in 32-bit mode.
Why?
So despite the fact that I have 8 gig of RAM in this thing, it can only use 2, and I can't ever really upgrade the operating system to a 64-bit operating system. It's just a limitation of boot camp on this model of the Mac Pro. And man, that thing's putting out a whole lot of heat in that closet.
I bet.
So I wouldn't be too surprised if in a couple of months I end up just buying that little Dell thing after all.
Well, at least it's been a good box for experimenting with.
It has. Absolutely. I'm glad I did. And I'll be spending a lot more time experimenting with and talking about Plex in the future.
Cool. All right. Well, that's going to do it for this week. If you want to get a hold of us, there's a lot of ways you can do that. We're on Twitter. He's at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard. And the website is at DigiMediaZone, D-I-G-I MediaZone. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/theDMZ. We've got an email address that you can send messages to. That's entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. We've also got another podcast that this guy does. Richard, what's going on with Home On?
So last week we talked about how we had an episode coming up where I was going to talk about the Amazon Echo and using the Amazon Echo in the connected home. And my friend Kathy Berry joined me for that. We had what I think was a fun discussion about that. I'm so sad I had to cut out so much of her portion of the recording we did because of audio problems that she had. But I think it's a good show. I think we touched on a lot of good topics, and check it out. It is there for real now. It landed this past Monday, and hopefully you'll enjoy it as much as I did.
I think the listeners will. Your show is always really informative. This one is still informative, but it you said fun. It really is a really fun episode to listen to.
Cool.
Definitely,
cool.
Definitely worth checking out. All right. Well, you can find all of the DMZ's podcast on iTunes and Pocket Cast and Stitcher Radio and TuneIn Radio and soon-ish Google Play. And if you...
Some of you may already have it. We don't know.
Maybe. Who knows? But if you like our shows, and you probably do if you're listening to this, the best way that you can show your appreciation for us is to go out to iTunes and leave us a rating, or if you really like us, a review too. It helps us out a lot, and we really appreciate that. And if you want to come back and be involved in this show in real time, you can do that too, because the show is recorded live, typically Tuesday nights, 8:30 p.m. Eastern. Sometimes that changes, but we always tweet when the show is going to be live. You can listen to us while we're recording this. There's a chat room for you to interact with us while we're doing it. And it's a lot of fun for you and for us. Quick update on the show's schedule, though. Next week, there won't be an episode of Entertainment 2.0 because life is insane for both of us next week. We will be back the following week, which should be really interesting because late next week, February 25th, is Microsoft's big gaming event. We're not really sure entirely what to expect from that. I'm guessing some Windows-focused gaming stuff, And a whole lot more. So we'll definitely hit on all of that and whatever else comes up over the next week. But that's going to do it for episode 358. I'm Josh Pollard. He's Richard Gunther. And we'll be back next time for episode 359. Until then, adios.
Goodbye.